The loss of community is not just painful, it's debilitating. Find a group of partners who get the pain of betrayal and can help to sustain you. I love how the word courage is nestled within encouragement. We need others. I often see women who have walked through this crisis together forge strong emotional bonds that last well beyond the crisis of infidelity. All hands on deck. I've been oddly surprised at how many women find relief after they hear about these dirty dozen. Cassandra said, "It feels like I'm being held together by safety pins. Now I get why I've been working so hard just to survive." As was the case with Cassandra, our basic foundation has been shaken. Every human being has essential needs in order to live and thrive. Safety, sleep, stability, love, self-esteem, life purpose, freedom, consistency, and a sense of control over their environment. Look how many of these basic needs are threatened by sexual deception. When we're impacted by these layers of trauma, we need to reach out towards others and ask them for help. They can grab a shovel and help us dig out. We too have to grab a shovel and dig out for our own sake. You might say it's not fair. Why should you have to pick up a shovel and do so much work to hear? I get it, and I agree with you. It's not fair. Sexual deception is not consensual. You didn't have a choice in the matter. It happened to you. But we do have choices about what we're going to do to heal. What I can offer you is compassion, understanding, and battle-proven ideas washed in blood, sweat, and tears to assist you on your way. What's happened in my life and in the lives of other betrayed women who have grown through their pain is a byproduct of something called post-traumatic growth. It's mind-boggling how trauma and transformation can coexist. Striking evidence now shows that when betrayed women are given the proper care and resources, they learn how to adapt and recover from adversity. It's how we find our voice, inner strength, freedom, and peace of mind as we deal with the ups and downs without becoming invulnerable, indifferent, or insensitive. Resiliency comes after we've been completely unraveled and put back together again. Something can happen in us that goes well beyond surviving. We can become a deeper, richer, and wiser version of ourselves. Post-traumatic growth is not something any of us go looking for. Yet strangely, we change through this crucible of uninvited pain. While I don't ever want to walk this road again, what I have walked through has changed me for the better. No matter what has happened to you, if you're willing to grab a shovel and roll up your sleeves, you can find yourself and begin to live again. Chapter 5, It's a Cry in Shame. I didn't see the signs. I feel duped. How could I have missed what was happening? I hear these phrases constantly. I experienced that myself and remember how remarkable it felt when my therapist, Dr. Michelson, said, "You were sucker punched, Sherry. You didn't see it coming." I never thought an idiom like sucker punched could make a girl feel so good. The dictionary definition of sucker punched is to punch a person suddenly without warning and often without apparent provocation. Betrayal trauma, especially with those closest to us, unzips us to our very core. That unseen fist of betrayal hits our underbelly with such a force that we lose our breath and often our way. When the people we trust to protect us and keep us safe harm us instead, it disorients us on a monumental level. It's not surprising that betrayal trauma theory has its origins in the study of children of abuse. My first 6 years in therapy training were with severely abused children. I can still remember when my supervisor, Dr. Brandon, penned 4 profound words on a dry erase board that twisted my philosophy of trauma into a pretzel. He wrote, "All behavior is purposeful." His words made complete sense in light of a situation that had occurred over the weekend. My lazy Saturday afternoon had been disrupted by an emergency phone call from a foster family. They were a solid family, and much to their surprise, their precious 4-year-old foster child, Lilia, had thrown a kitchen chair through their sliding glass door, leaving a gaping hole for all to see. Lilia was filled with mischievous delight, and over the months together, we built a strong alliance. Each week, when I arrived at their home, Lilia would open the door with a twinkle in her eye and a spirited squeal. Slamming the door was her glorious way of initiating a game of hide-and-seek. She loved to play, almost as much as she loved to be caught. Her little face would light up with glee when I finally came around the corner and found her burrowed in her secret hiding spot. When I arrived at their home, my eyes were drawn toward the shattered glass. I thought, how could this have happened? The hand-carved mahogany chair was 1.5 times her size and twice her weight. That day, I learned a valuable lifelong lesson. Context is everything. Without becoming curious about our stories, we don't have a chance at understanding the reasons behind why we do what we do. As I've often said to callers on the New Life Live radio show, your behavior is telling on you. Actions often give us clues when our words fall short. I needed the wisdom of Sherlock Holmes and the compassion of Mother Teresa to find out what happened to Lilia before the safety glass broke into 1,000 pieces. Lilia's birthday was on Friday. Her mother, a meth addict, was scheduled to see her on Saturday to open gifts and blow out candles on her cake. The party was planned. When her mother failed to show up for her weekend visit, Lilia's excruciating pain morphed into superhuman strength. Her behavior turned into rage without the words. This wasn't the first time her mother had failed to visit. Lilia had been living with a painful string of her mother's misses. This event became the icing on the cake, setting off her wound of neglect. Even at 4, she had a traumatic, shame-induced belief that said, "I'm insignificant and unimportant." Lilia was experiencing agonizing loss over what she desperately longed for and didn't get, to simply matter. When Lilia's mother didn't show up, her pent-up pain exploded like the sliding glass door. Trauma can feel overwhelming, and it becomes etched into our minds and emotions. We wonder why we can't feel joy, trust, or intimacy. It totally disrupts our image of ourselves. Unraveled. Tana found herself with symptoms of depression after discovering that her husband had been seeing several women during their 8-year marriage. In our first session, she shared, "I can never tell my father what happened. We had an arranged marriage with a very traditional wedding. I was a virgin when I married, and I'm not sure what my father would do to Shaw if he found out." Before we closed our session, I asked Tana if she knew the meaning of her name. Quite surprised, she looked at me and said, "Yes. I've been told it means healthy, strong, and anointed one." Several weeks later, Tana came into my office carrying a large gray satchel jam-packed with fabric. She began our session by slowly unfolding an ornately embroidered wall hanging she had purchased at a street fair. Turning the tapestry over, she said, "I feel so exposed. How I used to see myself is so far from who I am now. You see these crazy zigzag threads? It reflects how I feel, unraveled." Looking at the knotted up, broken, and chaotic dangling strings on the back of the tapestry, she said, "To me, it looks like my life, a complete disaster." Tana journaled some of the words to describe how she felt. Abandoned, alienated, alone, angry, anxious, attacked, betrayed, boxed in, chained, cheated, confused, crazy, criticized, crushed, deceived, disappointed, disgraced, despairing, disrespected, disturbed, depressed, destroyed, discouraged, defeated, enraged, failing, fearful, foolish, forgotten, frightened, furious, grieved, helpless, hopeless, humiliated, hurt, heartbroken, inadequate, insulted, lonely, let down, losing my mind, lost, manipulated, neglected, non-existent, not cared for, not nurtured, not a good wife, nervous, offended, out of control, overwhelmed, obsessive, panicky, powerless, put down, rejected, repulsed, resentful, ruined, sad, scared, scorned, screwed, shattered, sickened, stupid, stressed, sorrowful, terrified, ticked off, thrown away, unaccepted, unraveled, unzipped, unloved, used, unprotected, unsafe, unwanted, vengeful, violated, and vulnerable. Tana said, "It makes me think about how much I've lost. Nothing makes sense anymore. I am far from beautiful. I feel unlovable, and ultimately, I'm an enormous mess." Like Tana, betrayed spouses are overwhelmed by the grief and loss as their relationships, their worlds, and their identities are not what they used to be. The impact of sexual betrayal has called Tana to forget the truth of who she is. Before she left, I asked to see the finished side of the tapestry. Tana turned it over and draped the remarkable, intimate image of a lioness over her knees. The magnificent face of the lioness revealed strong cheekbones and clear, brilliant eyes that captured an inner strength. It was a powerful tapestry, accentuated by golden threads that shone brightly in the ambient light of the room. Mesmerized by this moment, I chuckled with delight and said, "Tana, I'm not surprised you were drawn to this tapestry. It reflects who you are." As I spoke those words, her deep bronze eyes lit up for the first time in weeks. Tears streamed down her cheeks. "My name! It's my name! It's who I am!" Tana had forgotten telling me about their original meaning behind her name. Healthy, strong, and anointed one. She was a woman of dignity whose life had been overrun by grief, loss, and overwhelming shame. Like you, she was on a journey to remember who she was before the betrayal. And like Tana, you have golden threads of great worth woven into your tapestry too. As you listen with me to this audiobook, let's find them. Even under the rubble of trauma, women possess amazing strength. Who we truly are is still within us and can be restored. Thankfully, we're hardwired for that as well. Wired for safety and survival. Our brains are designed to protect us. Every experience we have weaves our feelings, thoughts, sensations, and muscle memory, much like a tapestry. When woven together, both positive and negative events form connections in our brains. Science shows how our negative self-talk gets stronger every time we repeat things such as, "I am worthless," and agreeing with that thought only leads us deeper into self-defeat. Reversing these traumatic shame beliefs and learning how to tell ourselves the truth is how our identities heal. During traumatic events like sexual deception, our thoughts and emotions are wired to keep us at a distance from those painful things ever happening again. They send signals to our mind saying, "Hey, remember, you're not enough. Better keep to yourself. It hurts too much to trust anyone, so stay small and fly low. You won't get hurt that way." Wouldn't it be wonderful if a big sign popped up that said, "You are a much loved person who didn't deserve this. Something horrible just happened to you." Unfortunately, the brain doesn't work that way. It selfishly does what it needs to guarantee our safety and survival. How does it do this? A negative shame belief tightly wrapped around the way we see ourselves, plus a healthy dose of negative feelings. It's the mind's best strategy to keep us out of harm's way. When Tana's and Lilia's trauma-induced shame beliefs, "I'm unlovable," "I'm insignificant," and "I don't matter," are drenched in a laundry list of feelings, it guarantees their hearts are securely kept behind bulletproof glass. Betrayal trauma and the lies we believe. You're not alone. There are far more women on this journey with you than you can possibly imagine. I've been amazed at how many betrayed women share the same negative beliefs. My passion for partners has come by listening to what they believe about themselves and then helping them to recover the truth of who they are. Often these traumatic shame beliefs take on squatter's rights and set up residence in our minds. I believe there's something far worse than being told a lie. It's believing the lie about yourself for the rest of your life. During a marital separation from Connor, I recall a family member telling me, "If you hadn't decided to separate from Connor, he wouldn't have been tempted to be unfaithful." Those are the types of words that take root and cause us to blame ourselves, when actually, we've been wounded by another. Surprisingly, I had the presence of mind to courageously respond with, "I don't care if Connor was here or in Antarctica. He needs to be committed to me and the fidelity of our relationship. This is someone I loved and whose words I respected. I don't believe their intention was to cause me harm, but their comment placed shame on me." It's a crime to see how the impact of deception causes us to believe any number of lies about ourselves. Hasn't enough damage been done to us through the acts of deception alone? The last thing we need is to saddle ourselves with shame beliefs and misdirected guilt. Much of the personal pain that comes from betrayal trauma is a result of seeing ourselves through a misguided lens of shame. Dr. Brené Brown, a leading shame researcher, discovered that it takes three things for shame to grow: secrecy, silence, and judgment. One of the bravest things women of betrayal can do is share their stories of pain. I've discovered that it is a critical step in healing. When women who've been betrayed can share their stories in an atmosphere of confidentiality, they get some of the understanding, comfort, and truth they desperately need. The antidotes to shame are empathy, validation, and acceptance. You no longer need to isolate and hide. When partners are finally able to share how sexual deception has impacted them, they feel warmly blanketed, seen, and known. I've heard women say, "I'm seen. I don't have to scream anymore." This is the place I come to share things I haven't told anyone, and I leave feeling better. The size of understanding validate the crazy ride we have each been on. I often hear betrayed wives say, "I have enough pain of my own. I don't need to be burdened by someone else's story." It sounds counterintuitive, but listening to other women's stories and choosing to share your own with women who get it without the fear of shame or judgment produce powerful results. You will come to know that you are accepted and no longer alone. This is a treacherous and unfamiliar journey you are on. Don't try navigating these dangerous backroads alone. True healing comes in the community of others as you face the darkness of what you don't understand with others who see you. Common beliefs of partners of betrayal trauma. When I am asked to speak at conferences, I start by inviting women to look around at others in the room. Talk about a beautiful tapestry. In the audience are women of every beautiful size, shape, age, and nationality. I watch as light bulbs go off and something within them whispers, "Look around and see for yourself. It doesn't matter what you look like. It happened to them too." It's a great equalizer. The truth is, it's not about us. It's about what happened to us. Let me introduce you to some of the impacted partners I have met along the way. Like you, they are courageous women who want to heal themselves from the impact of these trauma-induced shame beliefs in order to restore their identities. You may not know them personally, but I asked them a question. What is one negative belief about yourself in light of what has happened to you? And this is what they said. "I'm crazy." Kylie. "I don't matter." Denise. "I'm unlovable." Madeline. "I'm sloppy seconds." Alexis. "I'm damaged goods." Lynette. "I'm not sexy enough." Kenesha. "I'm tired of being his porn substitute." Lucy. "I'm willing to humiliate myself to keep my commitment." Benya. "Overweight and out of shape, I'll never please a man." Melissa. "I'm invisible. Not a soul knows what I'm dealing with." Serena. "I'm on husband number two. I can't compete, not then and not now." Paige. "It's my fault. He had an affair because I'm too controlling." Jerry Lynn. "I deserve what happened to me. I'm paying for sins in my past." Gloria. "I'm too old and can never measure up to what my husband has seen." Rose. "I'm not a good enough housekeeper, and I'm not good enough in bed." Dorothy Ann. "I'm a horrible person. I can't tell anyone what I've done to keep him happy." Elena. "I'm too critical and angry. She must be sweet. No wonder he doesn't want me." Andrea. "I can't trust anyone. The person I trusted the most lied over and over and over again." Jillian. I imagine many of you identified beliefs that are similar to yours. These are common shame beliefs after betrayal. If any of these are familiar to you, there's hope. This audiobook is about telling yourself the truth. There is a reset button in our brain that's wired to change our minds. What you believe today can be turned around. As you continue listening, you will learn how to challenge your beliefs with a new set of eyes and be given practical steps towards intervention and change. As a trauma specialist, I've come to understand how painful events change the way we think and feel about others, our future, and ourselves. These negative beliefs are thoughtfully and emotionally wired in with the intention to protect us from further pain. The problem is, what initially colors our view becomes a straitjacket over time. Let's look at how Sharon was stumped by her negative beliefs and how she worked to turn them around. Challenging our shame beliefs. I tried hard to be a good wife. I did all the right things, and it happened anyway. My conclusion, I'm just not enough. Sharon. Sharon, a busy mother of three, was spinning in a cloud of dust trying to make sense of what had happened. She had been a loving wife and caretaker of her home, and she had been shocked when she discovered that her husband, Devin, an investment broker, had been involved with pornography and two different women since her first child was born. Her lip quivered as she desperately tried to hold back the tears. Yes, I've been a busy mom, but I work to make Devin's needs a priority. Just last Saturday, I joined him at his company's event where he was recognized for his outstanding performance. Sharon's eyes glazed over for a moment. Oh my. There were so many beautiful women at the event. It could have been any one of those women who came up to congratulate him. Without skipping a beat, she continued, I have Devin's clothes laundered, meals prepared, keep the home neat, and have sex with him, even when I'm really exhausted. I know how hard he works. How could all this have happened to me? I tried hard to be a good wife. I did all the right things, and it happened anyway. My conclusion, I'm just not enough. I gently explored deeper and asked, Sharon, before you discovered the other women, did you believe you were a good wife? A good mom? Sharon pondered the question for a moment and said, Yes. I thought I was doing my best. I volunteer in my kids' classrooms. I manage a gluten-free, dairy-free home. I give my family lots of hugs and kisses. I take care of what Devin needs and asks for. What more could I do? Not being good enough for him is the only thing that makes sense to me. Before Devin's affairs, Sharon believed she was enough, a good wife who cared well for the needs of her husband and family. The trauma-induced shame belief, I'm not good enough, was causing Sharon to believe she did something wrong by not being enough. Hogwash. Helping Sharon rethink her trauma-induced shame belief can free her from the crushing weight of feeling responsible for Devin's betrayal and believing she's inadequate. Her newly targeted belief, I am a good enough wife and mother, became part of our ongoing work together. Devin's decision to betray was not a result of who she was. It was the result of his choice. When a betrayed woman starts living out of her new belief, it's evidence she's embracing the truth. Looking at what you believe. Wounded partners have difficulty moving into empowered ways of living when these negative beliefs reside in their hearts. While there are reasons these shame beliefs are bouncing around in there, the good news is there are transformative ways of letting them go. The first step comes by taking these nagging neggies out of the dark and writing them down. It's the only way to know what they are so that we can turn them around. That's what cognitive behavioral therapy is about. Changing our beliefs so that we can change how we think, feel, and live. The Apostle Paul was a wise mind coach when he said, if there is anything true, noble, right, pure, lovely, admirable, excellent, or praiseworthy, center your mind on these things and implant them in your heart. Philippians 4:8. Even though he's right, many of us struggle to do this on the heels of betrayal. Here are some commonly shared betrayal-induced shame beliefs and the matching truthful beliefs that ultimately help us see our goal. So imagine a graph that says betrayal-induced shame beliefs. On the left-hand side, shame beliefs are the negative things we believe, and on the right-hand side are the truthful beliefs or the positive things that we want to believe. So here are the common trauma-induced shame beliefs. I'm not enough. Can be, I am enough. I must be crazy. Can be, crazy things are happening around me. I'm not sexy enough. Can be, I'm a real woman, attractive and lovable. I can't trust anyone. Can be, I can choose whom to trust. I can't trust my judgment. Can be, I can learn to trust my judgment or intuition. I'm not lovable, I'm worthless. Can be, I can be seen, heard, and known, I am lovable. I'm not in control, I'm helpless. Can be, I can learn to make choices about what I need. I'm stupid, how did I miss this? Can be, I'm actually smart, I've been deceived. I often tell women, betrayal does not have to define you. Don't give up and do whatever it takes until the truth of who you are and your identity is restored. Using the 180-degree turnaround below, let's see if we can help to identify one of your shame beliefs and turn that nagging neggy around. The 180-degree turnaround. What are your betrayal-induced shame beliefs? I've created a process to move you into truth-telling by turning your negative shame beliefs around. I call it the 180-degree turnaround. It has 5 simple steps. 1. Choose a specific betrayal event that caused you pain. Describe it in one sentence. An example of that is, I found pornography on my husband's computer. 2. With that situation in mind, ask yourself, what is the negative belief about myself in light of what happened to me? Shame beliefs are often stored in the brain as an I am ... statement. Put your belief in the first person as if you were to hear it in your head. It might sound something like, I'm not enough. I am unlovable. I don't matter. I'm stupid. How could I have missed this? It's important that you don't just look at what you think. Look at how you feel about yourself. I've had women tell me, I know I'm enough, it's not that. Yet, when we look at how they feel about themselves, how they are actually living, the belief comes to the surface. Our behaviors tell on us. It's then we uncover something called cognitive dissonance, when what we think and what we feel aren't on the same page. 3. Now apply the 180-degree turnaround by writing out the exact opposite message. What words would you like to believe about yourself today? I am enough just the way I am. I'm lovable. I'm significant and do matter. I'm smart and can think on my feet, The problem is I was deceived. 4. As annoying as your nagging Neggy is, ask yourself, is there any benefit to holding on to this shame belief? Women often tell me there's not a benefit. I completely get that. Yet, sometimes a shame belief is hidden in the form of an incentive like a chocolate chip cookie. Even though it might not be good for us, we naturally reach for more. Ask yourself, so what does holding on to this negative belief protect me from? Answers like, it keeps me from being hurt again. Or, I don't have to trust anyone. Or, I don't have to face my fear, begin to surface. These sneaky brains of ours will use anything, even shame, to keep us from getting hurt again. 5. Decide what you would be willing to do in order to turn your positive belief into an action step. Telling yourself the truth when that nagging Neggy surfaces is about being kind to yourself and firing that inner shame critic in your head. It's retraining your mind with honesty. When your nagging Neggy gets stuck. This 180-degree turnaround may help you find your way to your truth target. If these nagging neggies still don't shift, you may need to do some deeper work to help you change your mind about these beliefs. This can be done by working with a counselor who does cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, or eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, EMDR. There is a saying that whatever fires together, wires together. When memories and emotions are stored together, thoughtfully and emotionally, sometimes we have to rewire them by thinking and feeling our way back to truth. I'll be talking more about EMDR and other think and feel interventions in Chapter 18. Regularly attending a support group where you can be heard, be validated, and self-reflect with safe people can help turn things around as well. It's how we heal. Maybe you feel stuck and have been living with depression for some time. Depression and negative thinking go hand in hand. As we saw in Chapter 4, the impact of the Dirty Dozen creates tremendous loss that changes our brain chemistry. There is absolutely no shame in giving your brain the boost it needs through brain supplements or psychotropic medications while your mind is on the mend. There is so much at stake, especially when we're trying to heal from these trauma-induced shame beliefs. What we tell ourselves about ourselves has the power to bring life or death. Telling yourself the truth is life-giving and worth every effort to clear up these nagging neggies. There's tremendous hope in knowing that both your brain and your mind can change. Choose life. As with trying to correctly diagnose medical problems, it's important to invest what's needed to identify, treat, and heal your emotional wounds. Whether the roots of your trauma start in your betrayal experience, or like me, childhood wounds lie underneath the shock and pain of your betrayal, the situation requires healing. Traumatic events can leave us feeling like something is horribly wrong with us. We question our worth, lovability, belonging, and for some of us, even our very right to exist. In the next chapter, we'll be looking at how early wounds can negatively impact how we see ourselves. Our brains and hearts are wired for change. We can change what we can see. It is my hope that this audiobook becomes a vehicle to support your understanding of how the trauma has impacted you and empowers you to recover from it. I like how Carl Jung puts it, I am not what happened to me, I am what I choose to become. Yes, recovery takes bravery. I've watched women like you who got out of the deepest pits by never giving up until the truth of what happened to them and who they are, set their hearts free. Part 2, Unpacking the Effects of Early Trauma. Chapter 6, A house divided. I couldn't get out of bed. It was 1:30 in the afternoon and Connor hadn't returned from playing 18 holes of golf. My eyelids were as heavy as millstones and my body was too racked to move. Curled up in a fetal blob, I lay still. I wasn't hungry, hadn't showered. My hair was matted and sticking to my sweaty neck. The best part was, I didn't care. If I could just disappear, it wouldn't hurt anymore. In 5 hours, I'd have a house full of people. How could I love having people over, but dread them coming at the same time? I felt like a duplex, a house divided. I was two separate selves divided by a thick cement wall. One side of my duplex was what everyone saw. On the other side of the wall is what I hid from them. When people arrived, they'd see the first side of the duplex, the girl who's got it all together. The doorbell rang. People trickled in. Why can't I find a comfortable place to sit in my own home? People hugged me. Fake grin. I looked down at the lines on my freshly vacuumed carpet. At least I can do something right. I greeted everyone. I watched as they exchanged pleasantries and told stories. They made it look so easy. I laughed awkwardly, struggling to fit in. Nothing's funny. I checked the food table again and fluffed the chip bowl. Someone noticed and I felt admired. I became the perfect conversationalist as a small crowd formed around me. I brushed my hair back from my face, smiled, and stood a little taller. For a moment, I felt wanted. Everyone thought I was just fine. That's because no one sees the turmoil I'm living in on the inside. They couldn't see what I saw on the other side of the duplex, the woman who is real and raw. Can they tell I spent most of the day in bed? Or that I wadded up 6 outfits and threw them on the floor because I look fat in all of them? Does anyone know Connor sexually acted out 2 days ago? I'm out of shape and unattractive. I'm sure that's why he doesn't want me. I can't compete and don't have the energy to try. I'm dying over here. I just want someone to want me. Why am I keeping the secret? Why don't I tell? If I let anyone know, we're likely to lose our jobs, our marriage, and our home. It's my secret, too. I was a duplex. I felt split in two. It was a familiar place, one I knew all too well. So what's going on with us? What do we do when the shame from betrayal makes us want to duck, cover, and hide? Misinformation, misunderstandings, differing perspectives, or a lack of education has caused some of us harm. Even though I went through years of betrayal myself, I've personally asked women I've worked with to forgive me for words I've spoken with them after new information came my way. When it comes to handling the complexities of shame and betrayal, we still have so much to learn. To date, some researchers have acknowledged our pain as post-traumatic stress. Others call it co-addiction, and yet other professionals say it's codependency. How do we begin to navigate through this sea of labels when we're desperately looking for support? In many recovery circles, codependency is a common term used to describe the behavior of a family member involved with someone who's addicted. It's a strange word that most of us aren't quite sure what to do with. We've heard the word, yet aren't actually sure what it means. It's been known to be an illness, an obsession, an addiction, a sickness, a disease, a phenomenon, a personality type, and an immature emotional habit. Ouch! These baffling behaviors sound more like a problem without a cure. Codependency is a fairly new idea. In 1941, Karen Horney talked about how people overcome anxiety by pleasing others. 10 years later, Al-Anon used the term codependency to label family members of alcoholics. On the surface, these folks appear unselfish, accommodating, and loyal, yet many give up their own needs in exchange for love, acceptance, and security. They strive to keep the peace at all cost. Today, this term has become a catch-all to explain why people overdo almost anything. If you don't know why you've got what you've got, the answer is often you're codependent. For years, spouses of sex addicts have been seen as codependents and co-addicts. Research with betrayed partners by doctors Corley, Schneider, and Hook showed 41.3% reported the term codependent or co-addict described them. 40.2% reported they didn't relate to the terms, and 18.5% reported they related somewhat. These labels have been confusing for some women who've reported growing up in healthy families, and with others, the codependency and co-addict models have caused them to feel mislabeled or shamed. In 2009, Barbara Steffens challenged the status quo by revealing through her research how partners experience post-traumatic stress reactions from betrayal trauma. This trauma model continues to gain acceptance. Building on Dr. Steffens' work, I began to investigate as well. To help sort out the current pain of sexual betrayal from early childhood wounds, I worked with Dr. Kevin Skinner and an assessment called the Trauma Inventory for Partners of Sex Addicts, or TIPSA, along with two well-established questionnaires, one to identify current symptoms of post-traumatic stress, the PCL5, and the Adverse Childhood Experience, ACE, which looks at painful issues experienced while growing up. Abuse and difficulties in the home, including parental separations, divorce, and domestic violence. Of the 100 women who experienced betrayal trauma and took the questionnaire, 76% of them reported clinical symptoms of PTSD. 20 women reported no symptoms of early childhood trauma. And 16 of the same women reported clinical-level symptoms of PTSD. 51 women reported 1 to 4 adverse childhood experiences, and 36 of these women reported clinical-level symptoms of PTSD. 28 women reported 5 to 10 adverse childhood experiences, and 24 of these women reported clinical-level symptoms of PTSD as well. What this study showed is that regardless of whether women reported early childhood trauma, both groups reported clinical-level symptoms of PTSD. This may explain why some women who attend codependency or co-addict support groups can relate and find help, and others cannot. Each woman listening to this book has a different story that requires a thoughtful recovery path. I've included support groups in the resource section, and I'll be sharing those with you at the end of the audiobook. It'll assist you in making choices about what fits best for you. But the striking common thread for the majority of the women surveyed was symptoms of post-traumatic stress. Recovery programs working with betrayed partners can benefit from using a trauma model to inform their care. Resources aimed at healing their brains, bodies, and minds are a must. The knockout punch. Every betrayed spouse has to deal with two serious blows. The first hit is the sex act themselves, and before we can even catch our breath, we're faced with the knockout punch. The second shocking jolt comes as we realize our husbands have been lying to us to hide what they've done. Sexual deception harms us and damages our ability to trust. We are like injured parties wandering around in a crime scene, and our thoughts follow a pattern. 1. If I can just get you to stop doing the things that's causing me so much pain. 2. Then all this craziness and agony will stop. 3. And then I'll be safe and can get the love and stability I'm looking for. The problem is there are two people involved in this story. Both have the ability to change, and both have the ability to choose. When one party is choosing to sexually deceive the other, it's not even a horse race. No matter how much you want your spouse or loved one to stop lying and sexually acting out, if he doesn't work on his sobriety, he's choosing sexual infidelity over his recovery and you. This may be the most painful reality we have to face. We can't stop our husbands. Sexual betrayal throws our lives into a tailspin. Our best attempts to control the uncontrollable are often misunderstood. To simply be told, you need to stop controlling, or quit your detective behavior, only increases our shame. We have no way of knowing what sexual acts are happening around us. Our need to control often comes as we're trying to find safety from the violating sex acts we can't see. Unsuspecting partners feel blindfolded and punched at the same time. It makes sense why our trauma-induced shame beliefs are often, I'm not in control. I'm helpless, unable to stop this. And I can't trust anyone. As betrayed women, we're looking for two things we've been unable to attain. One, safety in an unsafe situation. And two, truth in the midst of deception. Control becomes a knee-jerk reaction to stop what's hurting us. Marriage with Connor was like being on a ship at sea. I was on deck while Connor kept shooting cannonballs into the hull of our boat. No matter what I tried to do, Connor continued to use porn and sexually act out with other women. It was a matter of life or death for me. My marriage felt like a ship at sea and our boat was taken on water. I grabbed buckets and desperately tried to bail water out for both of us. My control was a frantic attempt to keep the boat from sinking. For almost a decade, we dealt with cannonball after cannonball, discovery after discovery. There were times I needed to separate from Connor and get off the boat to distance myself from the lethal blows. Eventually, I realized I needed to figure out what choices I could make. I had to become my own captain on a sinking ship. Rethinking unresolved trauma. In its purest form, some of our reactions and observable behaviors are the result of unresolved trauma. Trauma can include the hurt from our sexual betrayal, as well as untreated wounds from our past. This idea of unresolved trauma can explain what's underneath labels like codependency, co-addiction, and PTSD, or even addiction for that matter. There are generally two types of events that get categorized as trauma, big T and little t. The big T traumas are often life-threatening and the ones most people see as traumatic, such as a plane crash, stabbing, terminal illness, or death of a loved one. Little t events are ones that may not be life-threatening but are life-altering, such as a job loss, divorce, long-term neglect, or relationship trauma such as a breakup. In my experience, lots of little t events can be equally as devastating as, or even more debilitating than a near-death accident. Both types cause wounds and can create behaviors, beliefs, and brain chemistry changes that need to be addressed. Let's take a look to see how all this works. In your mind, picture a large iceberg divided into five parts. The first layer, the tip of the iceberg, is unresolved relationship trauma. The second layer, a large mountain of ice just above the waterline, reflects the behaviors you might see in yourself or others in the recovery community. Those behaviors can be control, caretaking, dependency, guilt, low self-esteem, poor boundaries, powerlessness, perfectionism, shame, or excessive responsibility. When you think about these behaviors, is it possible that what we've been labeling as codependency or co-addiction is actually a cluster of painful events, beliefs, and behaviors caused by unresolved trauma? By working backwards and getting curious about the underlying shame beliefs that would cause us to behave this way, we'll often find nagging neggies like, I'm not in control, I'm insignificant, or I should have done something. Whether they're labeled codependency or unresolved trauma, here are the common traits we often see. So imagine a graph that talks about common traits that are seen in codependency and in unresolved trauma. Let me list some of those items that might be on the graph. Caretaking, catastrophizing, control, denial, dependency, difficulty expressing thoughts, emotional reactivity, panic or rage, excessive responsibility, guilt, intimacy issues, low self-esteem and shame, neglecting one's own needs, obsessive worry, passive aggressiveness, avoiding conflict, perfectionism, pleasing others, problems trusting others, self-loathing, substance abuse or impulsivity, trouble sharing feelings. This list sounds overwhelming, right? We're exhausted by the rabbit trails these behaviors keep us on. We hate how we feel. We get frustrated and wonder how to stop. Somewhere along the way, we've been impacted. Dealing with our unresolved trauma is the only way to make our path clear. Dazed. Lonnie groped for words. She could hardly get her thoughts out of her mouth. A counselor told me I was being reactive and needed to deal with my anger and control issues. 2 weeks ago, my husband told me about his 3-year affair. We have 2 children, a 4-year-old daughter and a 1-year-old son. Yesterday, he told me he has a 2-year-old daughter with another woman. You do the math. Lonnie called to ask what she was supposed to do for this new child. It was clear to me that she hadn't even begun to scratch the surface of her own pain. Her question took my breath away. Lonnie was experiencing shock, anger, denial, loss of control, indescribable hurt and pain, powerlessness, helplessness, unawareness of her own needs, difficulty expressing her thoughts and feelings, confusion in trying to figure out what to do with something she didn't cause. In this case, Lonnie was reacting to betrayal trauma. Lonnie didn't need to be judged, scolded, or shamed. She needed someone to understand her heart and to make room for her pain. She needed a safe place to sort out her emotions after the shock of her husband's betrayal and the discovery of a child by another woman. Betrayal trauma unzips us to the core. Spouses who react to sexual deception can be misjudged as codependent or quickly mislabeled with a personality disorder. I'm not saying that Lonnie doesn't have early trauma wounds that need to be addressed or that she wouldn't benefit from a recovery group. What I'm trying to make clear is that Lonnie has been deeply wounded. If she was hit by a car and in an emergency room with a bleeding head and broken arm, we wouldn't be asking her to tell us about the time she fell out of a tree when she was 8 years old. Not in the initial stages of treatment. If we look through the lens of sexual deception, we need to validate Lonnie's wounds and treat her betrayal trauma first. Move to collapse. When we experience layers of trauma, it changes how we weather our world. During a trip to Alaska, I discovered that glaciers literally have a cow when they're under too much stress from their environment. Calving happens when slabs of ice crack like thunder, break loose from the glacier, and crash into the sea. When we bear the burden of layered wounds, it creates cracks in our walls as well. The impact from earlier wounds set the stage for vulnerabilities and how we might react before, during, and after betrayal. Like the collapse of a glacier wall, multiple discoveries of sexual deception wear away at us too. On a gurney, treating first things first. Sometimes our pain is so great that we look for a way to bounce out of our agony as quickly as possible.